On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Is this the best Cavs team of all time? And who is the best player on the Cavs? And are we sleeping on the Lakers defense with Luka Doncic? That and more coming up right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to The Big Number. As always, you can catch it here on Yahoo Sports every week with my guy, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on, man?
Tom, I'm invigorated. I've had my revenge game at physical therapy. I went back. I tore it down. Some people there are furious. Some people were really happy to see me. And so I'm feeling very, very motivated based on the way the week is going. But Tom, I'm excited. I'm thrilled. I'm here to put up some numbers. So why don't you tell me what our big number is for this week?
Well, it's not the big number this week, Dan. It's the big diff. That's right. We're doing the big diff this week. Yeah, yeah. You might know what I'm talking about if you're from the Great Lakes area, particularly in Cleveland. This week's big number is plus 11.7. That is the Cleveland Cavaliers point differential this season, as they like to call it, the diff. If you've seen any of their broadcasts, if you've seen it at the scoreboard over the last, I don't know, couple decades, they do the little thing where it says the diff. If you can't figure out the math of like, hey, the Cavs are up 30 to 20, they put it on the screen. It says the diff. And so this week, we're going to talk about the diff. That plus 11.7 is actually the best point differential in Cavs history. Yes.
Wow.
Better than the LeBron teams, better than
Mark Price, Brad Doherty, Larry Nance.
The Sean Kemp era. Of course, the Sean Kemp. No, I'm just kidding. Kemp era. All of these teams, they're looking up at the diff of this team right now. Wow. Kenny Atkinson has led the best Cavs team in the regular season. Best team this NBA season is in the standings, the Cleveland Cavaliers, but also the best Cavs team in franchise history. So let's look at some of these teams here. We have plus 11.7 for this year's team. 2009 plus 8.9. In 89 plus 7.6. These teams aren't even in the same like stratosphere as this team. So when you're looking at the Cavs and you're saying to yourself, how are they doing this? It's not because of one guy. In a lot of those teams, it was LeBron and then company, right? This team is a team in the purest sense. You know, you reminded me this column I wrote after the Boston Celtics won the championship. I thought that the biggest story, the biggest takeaway from that team was the fact that they had a big five. It wasn't a big three, and it wasn't a big one. And the reason why I think that's so notable is that in the era of all of these players getting injured, star players getting injured, the depth of star talent, rather than having the best player in the NBA, it might be worth having just five all-star caliber players that are kind of under the radar that can fill in a role and be stars. It's nice to have five all-star caliber players.
It's a real hot take backed up by the math, I'm sure, that having five all-stars would be good.
Yeah. And that's what this episode is about, is why five all-stars is better than one. But you know what I'm saying though, right, Dan? Adage was there's only like five guys in the NBA that you need to have on your team in order to win the big one. And of course, we're seeing with this Cavs team that like Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, Ty Jerome, Max Strus, and now DeAndre Hunter, all these guys, awesome players. Like if you look at the MVP conversation right now, right? It's not about Donovan Mitchell or Evan Mobley or Darius Garland or Jared Allen. Those guys are really good, all-star players. But in terms of like the tippy top of the NBA, it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Nikola Jokic and Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum. Those are the guys that even according to ESPN.com's Tim Bontemps' straw poll, we're getting the majority of the MVP votes. And then you get Donovan Mitchell, but he's not, I don't think anyone would say, like, hey, he is the clear-cut MVP this year. And yet, the Cavs are the best record in the NBA and one of the best point differentials in NBA history. So right now, after beating up on the Orlando Magic, Dan, they have the fifth best point differential in NBA history. Okay? And the four teams ahead of them, one of them is the Oklahoma City Thunder. course, 12.7 right now. But the other teams, they all won the championship. Basically, any team that is playing at this level in the regular season, they've won a championship. So, Dan, my question to you is, should we consider them kind of like in the that upper echelon of title contenders, even though they haven't really penetrated without LeBron James? They haven't really gotten into the conference finals or the finals without him. Like, should we take this differential seriously?
It's a pretty big friggin' diff. Yeah, I think we should take it pretty seriously, Tom. I mean, this is not, to the extent that we even should have been like poo-pooing or you know, glad-handing 15-0, like this isn't 15-0. This is 48-10. This is like the bulk of the regular season is behind us. You know, we're less than 7 weeks away from the start of the playoffs, and this is still a team that's on a historic pace. Best defense or best offense in the league, rather, by a chunk. And, you know, we'll get into this later, but one of the best offenses that we've ever seen in terms of its efficiency of point production. Still a top 10 defense anchored by those two bigs, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. And the areas where Cleveland has been weakest in its two earlier postseason exits, where they went out to the Knicks in the first round a couple of years ago, they go out to the Celtics last season after kind of like white knuckling it past the Magic in round one. There weren't enough wings who could shoot. I think we're probably going to talk about this. They got some of those now. They got a bunch of those now. They got a whole lot of everybody who can shoot now. And then the other one was that just the size on the wing, right? There was no, you know, your best bet defensively on the perimeter was, you know, Isaac Okoro and 6'5 wing. If you're going up against the Jason Tatums and the Jaylen Browns, you know, some of the other sort of lethal, you know, wing offensive players you're going to have to deal with in the East. The Cavs didn't really have one of those. Now, no one's saying that DeAndre Hunter is Kawhi Leonard, right? But there is that size-wise, you bring him in, you add Javonte Green on a flyer, you know, a guy who's sort of outperformed his reputation in the league on the defensive end. You add in Max Strus, you add in Isaac Okoro, you add in Dean Wade when he's healthy, who is a huge part of this team. And you know, I think there's something like 30-5 when he's in the lineup this season. There's more depth and more answers here, more cards for Kenny Atkinson to play. So you get to a point where it's like the only arguments against them that you can really feel good about making are, you know, maybe Donovan Mitchell isn't, you know, can't be the best player in a series against, or they were not going to have the best player in the series against insert elite team here.
Right.
But right, they might have 2-5, right? Or 4-7. And then the only other one is just they haven't done it yet. And you know what? The Warriors didn't do it until the Warriors did it. And the Celtics hadn't done it until the Celtics did it.
Yes.
Sometimes
yes,
it just takes the right mix of guys, the right mix, the right depth, the right system, the right coach pulling the strings, and you can go an awfully long way. So yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big friggin' diff to me, and I think we should take it pretty friggin' seriously.
There's a lot of big diff puns we could do. I actually, whenever I say diff, I think of Duffman. Duffman can't breathe from The Simpsons. And I feel like they need to have a diff man. Should we?
They already have like four mascots in Cleveland, though, don't they? There's Moondog, there's the Cavalier. I guess maybe that's only two. Tristan Thompson, technically, there's a third mascot there. So, I mean, diff man, now, hang on. Now the Pistons are fired here. Now everything's locking into place. Tristan Thompson in a duff man uniform instead of his warmups for most of the game. Hear me out.
I love it. If that doesn't work, we can always suggest Mike Goldfarb, our senior producer on this show. Do you think Mike would do it?
I think Mike would.
It would be the diff man. We just have the in the tights and everything.
There would be a you know, like in cartoons where someone runs away quickly and there's just like them outlined in smoke or in you know, or like a them shaped hole in the wall as they've left. There would be a Mike shaped hole in the Riverside recession for us. And he would just be out on his way to Northeast Ohio in a heartbeat.
How have they not done this already? Pardon me if we've totally missed it and they've already introduced the diff man and maybe it started and then they just got rid of it quickly. I don't know, but feels like we're on to something here, Dan.
I think we are. I think the Cavs are onto something pretty special too.
So I think what you hit on there with the depth and the fact that they could have the best, you know, 2-7 in the NBA. Look, man, like, I've had this problem when I'm covering the Cavs this year where I'm like, who is their best player? Like, on one night, it's Evan Mobley. On the next, it's Jared Allen just extinguishing everything out there and finishing lobs and great passes to the corner. And then you're like, Darius Garland might be the best clutch player in the NBA this season. You go through it and you're like, wait, maybe it's Ty Jerome. Like, they've got so many good players that are coming up big for them that I think that's part of the problem of scouting this team is that Kenny Atkinson, all of the actions that they're running, it's because he's kind of mobilized and animated so many of their skill sets, and it's so hard to guard. And that's why when you ask like 10 NBA coaches, hey, who are the top five Cavs that you like have to game plan against or like mess up your game plan on a given night, you're probably going to get 10 different answers. And that's what I think is so amazing about this Cavs team is that they're just coming at you from all angles. And last year they were good, but not nearly this good. And that I think the LeBron team that went to the NBA Finals in 2007, I think their diff wasn't very big. I think it was plus 3.8. To give you an idea of how crazy it is that this team is at plus 11.7, it's that it's like triple what a Finals team did with the Cavs a long time ago. And even if you do a pace adjustment here, you know, margin of victory can be influenced by pace. If you play a lot of possessions, a lot of potential for some blowouts that can skew that number a little bit. But even if you look at that, this is one of the best teams ever in the regular season. And people aren't buying it, A, because the Boston Celtics are in the same conference and they have to go through Boston, the defending champs. And secondly, I think some people just have a hard time. They remind people of, I don't know if it's the colors. I think it reminds people of the Atlanta Hawks. Remember when they had a 60-win yes. season and then they ran into LeBron and it was like, oh yeah, that was all fool's gold back in like 2015. They had like four all-stars. Shout out to Jeff Teague and Kyle Korver, Paul Millsap. And they were just like, why don't we believe in this team? And then they run into the gauntlet, which is LeBron James, and it just ends quickly. But that Cavs team, there you go. So I think we're going to have to talk about the big diff here, break it down into little diffs, little numbers, where we're going to walk you through why this team is so good, why they're so hard to defend, and some of the cast of characters here in Cleveland that might be underrated and might win some awards this season, coming up right after the break. All right, Dan, so we're talking about the big diff, plus 11.7, the Cleveland Cavaliers' margin of victory this season, which is the best in NBA history for a Cleveland Cavaliers team. Are they the best Cleveland Cavaliers team ever? I think it remains to be seen in terms of the postseason. We can say definitively this is the best regular season Cavs team ever, but I think, as it always happens with the NBA, we'll see when it comes to the postseason. Are they going to be better than the 2016 team? Are they going to be better than the 2017 team that went to the NBA Finals with Bobby Gibson? I think this team's better than that team, the 2017. Whether they get into the NBA Finals is another story. But putting that aside, Dan, four little numbers. What's the first one you got for me?
I'm going to be thinking about Lil Diff this whole time because now I'm like, oh, what kind of rapper is Lil Diff? The little numbers this week, our first of the four little numbers.
Is it Bone Thugs from Cleveland? Is that?
That's true. Yeah, Bone Thugs and Harmony. Yeah, you'll often hear their music it was Quicken Loans Arena, whatever. Yes, you are right.
It's Diff Arena now. It's Diff Arena. Yeah.
Right. And the Diff, as we've established, is massive. Our first little number this week is 107.6. That is the Cavs' offensive rating plus this season. It's offensive rating plus is a stat that our friend Jared Dubin publishes at his Substack Last Night in Basketball. And it's an adjusted metric. So it takes how many points a team scores per 100 possessions and looks at how that compares to what a league average offense is producing in that same season. So the farther you are above 100, the better you are and the further the gap is between you and the average offense. So that means the Cavs offense this season has been 7.6 points per 100 better than league average, which would make it the third best offense since the ABA-NBA merger in 1976. The only two above them, 2003-04 Mavs, 04-05 Suns. So peak Dirk and Nash together and year one Nash 7 seconds or less. That's it. That's where this offense is in terms of how efficiently it's producing points and how like how much it's lapping the field in terms of being above the league average offense this season. So putting them into some context there, where this is like rarefied air for the history of the NBA in terms of how this Cavs team is scoring, what makes this Cavs offense so damn good?
They got so many shot makers and playmakers. I mean, you talk about Evan Mobley or Ty Jerome or Darius Garland. Even Jared Allen can make plays in a short role. And when he's hitting shooters, there's just so much they can do. They've got so many different weapons, Dan. And like you talked about Steve Nash, how he's the kind of common denominator there. Steve Nash is great at many things. And so is Darius Garland. One of the things that he does that Steve Nash did is the 50-40-90 club, where if you shoot 50% from the floor, 40% from three, and 90% from the free throw line, you're in this like exclusive club, VIPs of NBA efficient, the greatest shooters ever. You got Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Steve Nash, Larry Bird. It's an elite circle, right? Darius Garland, he's right there. He is six made free throws away from being in the 50-40-90 club this season. And he's not the only one on this Cavs team that is right there in the 50-40-90 club. Ty Jerome is two free throws away from being in the 50-40-90 club. As a team, they're right there in the 50-40-90 club. And I should say the 90%, little bit too high for the too tall of a task for them to do as a team. But the 50-40 part, we've never seen it in NBA history. And that's they're right bonkers. There on the fringe of being a 50-40 team. So the shot making, the shot profile is very Morey Ball-esque. They take a lot of three-pointers, not crazy amount, but they're very efficient. One of the best three-point shooting teams in terms of volume and in terms of efficiency. Then you've got a team that like they take a really high percentage shots at the rim. They just have a really smart, disciplined shot profile and they don't turn the ball over. And guess what? When you do that, you're going to be an elite team. I did not know that they were top three all time in terms of the relative efficiency. It's a kind of... This is the offensive era, the scoring era. And even by that standards, when you just put it on a level playing field, it's crazy to think that this Cavs team that I didn't even have on my title contender list before the season. Like I do the Tom's title tiers every week before the season, I didn't have the Cavs on there. And Kenny Atkinson's like, hey, Tom, come here. You're a moron. You're a moron. And sure enough, they're right there because of that offense. It's a ridiculous offense.
It absolutely is. And I think as you're to your point, the way that Kenny Atkinson wants to structure it and the depth that he's got to use, it can be anybody on any given night, which brings us to our second little number, 0.175. So walk with me here. There's 252 players in the NBA that qualify for the minutes per game leaderboard. Of that 252, only 24 of them are averaging at least 0.175 win shares per 48 minutes this season. So win shares is what it sounds like, where you take there's a formula for a team wins. How do we apportion credit for that win based on what a player produces in their box score and elsewhere? So 24 guys averaging at least 0.175 win shares per 48. The Cavs have five of those 24. Donovan Mitchell. So
they have over a fifth. They have 20% of the best players in the NBA on their team.
Through this metric, win shares per 48 minutes. Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and say his name, Ty Jerome, are five of the top 24 in this metric. Five is the largest number for any one team in the NBA. Only other one that has more than two is the Boston Celtics, who have four players. In fact, according to our friends at StatHead.com, no team has ever finished a season with five guys above that 0.175 mark. Only 13 teams have ever had four, and seven of those, so more than half of those, won the finals. I think two more had gone to the finals too. So if you have this kind of concentration of high-quality players, chances are you're going pretty far. Now, like any stat, win shares are not necessarily perfect when it comes to apportioning those credits or blames, as the case may be. But what does the fact that half of this team's rotation ranks so highly in this metric tell us about who these Cavs are this season?
Well, it's kind of what Kenny Atkinson had in the Warriors, which is strength in numbers. When he was an assistant coach under Steve Kerr, the Warriors had strength in numbers as their motto. And very much, we're big fans of that motto here at The Big Number. This team is kind of the embodiment of that, is that no matter who's out there, they're going to just bludgeon you. They're so good and their depth is so good and they play together. It looks like they've played under Kenny Atkinson's system for years, which speaks to not just the hiring of Kenny Atkinson and the job that him and his coaching staff had done, but also Kobe Altman and the front office there in Cleveland. They kept this team together when I think a lot of GMs might be tempted to just kind of pivot and say, like, look, it's not working. We're not getting over the hump after the last couple of years with Donovan Mitchell, but they kept it together. And guys like Ty Jerome are blossoming in this system. Ty Jerome last year was ranked in the 35th percentile offensively, according to dunksandthrees.com's estimated plus minus metric. I'm using this one to just kind of show you the development from last year to this year. He was 35th in offensive production by in value at EPM. This year, he's at 92nd percentile. So he went from minus 2 points added per 100 possessions with his offensive skill or offensive impact, and now he's plus two. That swing from minus two to plus two in EPM is the largest swing in the NBA. Ty Jerome, if he's not the most improved player of the year, it's probably because people don't know enough about Ty Jerome. He's got an incredible bag. He's got an amazing shot profile where he can shoot it from anywhere on the floor. And on Tuesday night against the Orlando Magic, I mean, he was toying with those dudes. And that's like the best defense in the NBA. And he was hitting shots that were ridiculous. So Ty Jerome, most improved player in the NBA by EPM and one of the top 24 players by win shares per 48. Hats off to this dude. What a season by Ty Jerome.
And that goes a long way too, to sort of side part here, is because he missed a bunch of last season with an injury. I think it was an ankle injury that he needed to have surgery on. And, you know, we think a lot about the other guys, the sort of higher wattage marquee guys. Darius Garland missed time last year with the broken face, and Donovan Mitchell missed time, and Evan Mobley missed time. I think it was like 84 games combined for those three guys. Not having a 6'5 guard that you can trust, like high assist to turnover ratio, can shoot from all over the place, get you into your offense, like that, they were missing that all last season too. So yeah, you come to it now and there's just so many guys who can create and so many guys who can handle that you feel like you can trust with the ball in their hands, which brings us to our third little number. That's 8.0. That's how many times Evan Mobley is driving to the basket per 36 minutes of floor time this season, according to Second Spectrum. 8.0, it doesn't put you up at the top of the league with the Shai Gilgeous-Alexanders and everybody, but 8 is more than 2 drives per 36 more than Mobley was doing last year. It's more than double what he was doing 2 years before that. This is like a pretty neat encapsulation of a pretty big skill development for Evan Mobley, where he's tightened up his handle, right? He's more comfortable creating in short, in tight quarters and being able to get someplace from point A to point B with the ball in his hands. He can get to the paint more easily. He's finishing more confidently when he gets there, drawing more fouls, higher percentage of his shots going down on those drives, and all of which have gone a long way toward Mobley having his most efficient scoring season as a pro, even as his usage rate goes up. And those things don't always go up together, right? Your usage rate goes up means that you're shouldering a larger workload on the offensive end. You don't always do that more efficiently. Evan Mobley's doing both those things, the mark of an all-star, which he's been. We knew that Evan Mobley was a special defensive talent before this season, but what have you seen from him on the offensive end this year as he's been part of that overall Cleveland kind of glow up?
Can he be like a Jalen Johnson or like a big wing that like, or big, a 6'11", like heliocentric dude in the future, like 3 years down the line, if he keeps this up, like, can he be kind of this big ball handler, playmaker? Because like the leap from this year, last year to this year is insane. Like last
plastic,
year he had
like plastic man, Pascal Siakam, something like that.
Yes. Yes. yes, we're going to do Plastic Man. We got Diff Man. We're going to just line them all up this episode. Right. Like when you watch him, he's got the ball in his hands creating offense, whether it's the wing or even at the top of the key, way more than he did last year. Last year, according to Synergy Sports, he had 22 plays in the pick and roll as the ball handler. He's the guy running the pick and roll. Last season, he had 22 plays the entire season. This year, he's got 86 already. We're two-thirds of the way through the season. We've had triple the amount of plays where he has tried to score or created out of the pick and roll as the ball handler. That's insane. The dude's like 7 feet tall. He's 23 years old, and Kenny Atkinson's like, yeah, go be Luka Doncic out there. Go be Draymond Green out there. Run our offense, and he's doing a great job of it. Oh, by the way, he's shooting 44% on corner threes. Oh, by the way, he is the best cutter, the most efficient cutter in the Synergy Sports database. Last 20 years, they've been tracking who is the most efficient at cutting to the basket, getting the ball, finishing at a high level. He's shooting 80% off his cuts this year. And in the whole database of all the players that have at least 100 cuts to the basket when they're with scoring opportunities, only two players can match his efficiency on those plays. He's averaging 1.61 points per play, 80%. Basically, effective field goal percentage on those plays. It's LeBron James, peak LeBron James, and peak Dwight Howard. Evan Mobley is not just shooting 46% or 45% from the corners, not just being the best cutter in Synergy Sports history. He's also running pick and rolls, and he's being a great rebound, all of these things. And he might win DPOY. Like this guy, again, Ty Jerome could win Most Improved Player of the Year, but this dude, he might be the big diff of the big diff, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's making me think about conversations we've had about the Celtics, about the Knicks, where the threat of the shooting everywhere and the threat of multiple guys who can make plays stretches the defense out. So it creates so much space. It decongests, even when you're playing two bigs, right? Like a more interior bound big like Jared Allen, and Evan Mobley's not like a high volume shooter, but there's still so much more space because you have to worry about both Mitchell and Garland off the, you know, either pulling up or off the catch. You've got to worry about all those wings that they've got now that can shoot. And then it creates more space for Evan Mobley to say, I'm getting the ball at the elbow and I'm going downhill. I'm taking the ball off a ball screen up top. I'm running a 4-5 pick and roll with Jared Allen, or I'm running an inverted pick and roll with one of my guards coming up and setting, and I'm getting downhill because there's more room. And spacing is offense, offense is spacing. The shooting and the threat of all that playmaking, it's a virtuous cycle. It just kind of feeds into each other.
You were just talking about the pick and roll actions. Like one of the best things they do, Kenny Atkinson does, it's not him as a ball handler, but Max Strus, they'll do this like DHO where with Max Strus, and Evan Mobley will just like hand the ball off to Max Strus, and both guys have to like come out because it's Max Strus. He's going to hit a three or roll off of that and create offense. And then Evan Mobley's just got like a beeline open rim run, and he's going to catch the ball. And Strus and him have great chemistry in that action. And a lot of this is just like, if you're a big trying to guard Evan Mobley, how many decisions do you have to make? Because he's got all these weapons, like as a ball handler, as a runner, as a pick and pop guy now, like there's just so many things that he can do.
And Strus has been pretty important. Like, I mean, he had missed some time earlier with injuries and sort of took some time getting back into the lineup and getting sort of healthy and ramped up. But they've been killing with him in the starting lineup. I think they're 12-4 in the 16 games that Strus has started. That starting lineup where it's the core four plus him is plus 88 in 119 minutes, almost plus 34 per 100 possessions. Like they're bombing on people. So like DeAndre Hunter was the guy, you had him like winning the trade deadline for getting DeAndre Hunter, and he's getting 25 minutes a game off the bench because they're crushing with the other guys that they have that they can put into the lineup. So it's an embarrassment of riches, tons and tons of options. And that, Tom, is going to bring us to our fourth little number, and that is 10. That's how many members of the current Cleveland Cavaliers roster are averaging at least 19 minutes per game this season. On the flip side of that, that's only one player is averaging more than 31 minutes a game. That's Donovan Mitchell, just over 31 minutes a game, which is by far a career low for him, lower than even his rookie season in Utah. You mentioned the strength in numbers, whether that comes from, you know, like Kenny Atkinson worked under Mike Budenholzer, who worked under Pop, and you got like the begets of where load management comes from, right? Maybe it's Steve Kerr in Golden State, but that is absolutely the operating principle here in Cleveland, where you've got I think they're top five in minutes that they get from their reserves. They're third in bench net rating. They can go to Ty Jerome. They can go to DeAndre Hunter. They can go to Sam Merrill, who's another one of those like curling off the catch kind of bombers that they love to go to in some of those actions. Even the guys that don't play can play. Like I like their rookie Jalen Tyson. Craig Porter Jr. Was valuable for them last year when they had all their ball handlers hurt. You know, like there's all these guys that like there's so many guys you can trust. Yes, this team does not have a LeBron, as you mentioned earlier, one of those like top tier players. But is it possible that having this sort of depth can make that up for these Cavs?
Yeah, man. You mentioned it. A lot of these the minutes are just, hey, we don't want to push these guys too hard. And also it's when they're blowing out these dudes, like they don't need to play 40 right. minutes when the score is so out of hand, like they did against Orlando, where it's just like it's out of hand within the opening minutes of the game. I'll mention this. They are right now after the third quarter with a lead. They are 43-0 with a third quarter lead going into the fourth quarter. That's insane. They are beating teams so badly that there's almost no hope going into the fourth quarter. So that's an incredible stat. Max Strus, let's talk about him. Okay. Cause he is the guy that has the most postseason experience in terms of going deep into the postseason with the Miami Heat going to the finals. And he's going to be an integral part of what they do in the postseason. They're so deep, but what he does and all the movement that he does offensively, Kenny Atkinson is using him like they're Steph Curry. This season, Max Strus is averaging a 5.24 miles per hour offensively. I'm going to say that again. It's a weird stat. If you haven't been following, you can see this on NBA.com/stats. Hit the tracking button and you can see the average speed for every NBA player broken down by offense and defense. Max Strus is averaging 5.24 miles per hour offensively. That is number one in the NBA. And there's no one really close. For those who are averaging 20 minutes or more, he's at 5.24. The next highest is 5.1. So he is quite literally running laps around the rest of the NBA in terms of movement in offense. He doesn't stop. And this is kind of what Steph Curry is famous for, is off-ball movement. They're using Max Strus. And Jared Weiss did an amazing story over at The Athletic talking about all that movement and the cutting and the constant movement has created such a headache for defenders trying to keep track of everybody. And like when you got Evan Mobley in the corner, who's a 44% three-point shooter from the corner. Anthony Edwards one time this year just completely fell asleep. Max Strus comes around, or Darius Garland, I forget who it was, the ball handler just threw a lob over Anthony Edwards and Evan Mobley finished it. Because like these teams, they don't get a break when they're defending the Cleveland Cavaliers. So like, man, the depth is crazy. Max Strus, we talked about Ty Jerome, talked about Evan Mobley, we talked about all these dudes. And what I thought was so interesting is coming into this episode, we're talking about the big diff, and of course they extend it against the Orlando Magic. I'm watching the game and I'm like, no matter who they throw out there, they're just building and building the lead. Yeah. And then I look in the box score. Check this out, Dan. In that last game on Tuesday night against the Magic when they beat them by 40, in that box score, 12 guys who were +8 or better in that game, meaning when any of those 12 were on the floor, they outscored the opponent, the Orlando Magic, by at least 8. The margin of victory was at least 8 for all 12 of those guys. And most of them were in the 15, 16, 20 range. And that is a franchise record. 12 players with a +8, +/- in a single game. That's never happened in Cleveland history. And so coming into this game, we're talking about have this as a slip of the tongue. We're talking about the depth and the diff. You put it together and you've got a record-breaking night Tuesday night going into this week's big number. They've got so many guys who can make high impact plays, high impact performances on both ends of the floor. And that is why they're the big diff this week on the big number. Hey, Dan, do you have any other thoughts on the Cavs before we move on?
I don't, but I think that we might want to talk about a couple other guys capable of making high impact plays on both ends of the floor. So why don't you get me out of here, Tom Haberstroh?
After the break, we're going to talk about this other team that you might have been following recently, the Los Angeles Lakers and Luka Doncic, right after the break. All right, the little diff. The little differ? The little differ? The little diff? That's your advantage in over-under scoreboard. You're still at plus two. Not much to kind of talk about here. Maybe a little bit Steph Curry and the fact that he on the floor with this Jimmy Butler trade. We set the over-under on his on-court rating was at 120, and we both took the over. And before this Jimmy Butler trade, that was we were looking dumb. Now, since the trade, we're looking very smart. So thank you, Mike Dunleavy Jr., for acquiring Jimmy Butler. And thank you, Jimmy Butler III, for being as good as you are. Because right now, Stephen Curry is, since the trade, is 122.7 on-court rating. So that's still pretty good. That's peak Steph Curry levels. And we've got a little bit left of the season on that front. But look, man, Luka Doncic, as a member of the Lakers, that game against the Dallas Mavericks, where he's doing push-ups in front of Nico Harrison and claims, I didn't see him. I don't know what to do with this guy's eyes. Luka Doncic. I wrote about it for TomTheFinder.com this week, dude. Dan, I've watched that highlight of Luka Doncic throwing the no look behind the back pass to behind the head. I don't even know what you call it. The no look behind the head pass to Austin Reeves right in the pocket, like a bullet right to Austin Reeves. I haven't figured out how he saw him. Like, how did he know he was there?
When he actually knew. Yeah, it's. I mean, he has to know before he kind of gets downhill and gets into the paint, because he's got to figure, like, or he must be shaking up, so he's going to be there. But he's played with this guy for like 15 seconds and yeah. is just like, I know where he's going to be. And it's bonkers. I mean, like, it is really incredible to, like, not that anybody in Dallas needed a reminder of what they were missing, but certainly offered it there. And, but, you know, not for nothing though, even within that, this was like a one possession game with a few minutes left. I'm not going to say that there's like a world in which I think that the Mavs come away winning this deal in the short term or anything like that. But I do think there is a world in which when they get their complement of bigs back, this can still be a pretty competitive roster with the ideas behind why the trades were made, even if those ideas seem insane to us.
And the defense, man, this is what just shakes me to my core about the thought of doing this trade. You think him going to LA and playing with LeBron and under JJ Redick and playing for the Lakers, you don't think that that's going to just rejuvenate Luka and have that chip on his shoulder of like, I'm going to prove you wrong, Nico. I'm going to prove you wrong. Anyone in the front office who wanted me out there, I'm going to bust my ass defensively. I'm going to get after it. And I'm going to try a lot harder than what you're supposedly thinking, that I wasn't good enough on the defensive end or not conditioned enough. Like, that's what's so bizarre about this trade and the thinking of like, if I trade him to the Lakers, we're going to win that trade. Well, the way he's been defending since that trade, he's been good. Like, I'm sorry. When people talk about Luka Doncic and like he's a one-way guy, or at the end of that season, the postseason run against the Celtics, like he was just exhausted and he wasn't giving the effort. And Brian Windhorst called him out on ESPN on air, just being like, he's got to play better defense. They're targeting him and they're destroying him. Like, Luka has responded in a big way. He's had his best defensive season of his career this year. What you're seeing right now with the Lakers, he's ramped it up big time. Luka Doncic, when he's on the floor for the Lakers, defensively, the Lakers are allowing just 105.1 points per 100 possessions with Luka Doncic on the floor. That's way better than when they had Anthony Davis on the floor. Way better. Now, I'm not saying Luka's a better defender than Anthony Davis, but I'm saying, like, you can't argue that Luka Doncic has been a net negative on that end of the floor when he's getting three steals, two blocks, he's getting offensive fouls, he's taking charges, blocking dudes at the rim. Like the first defensive possession in that game on Tuesday night, he's swatting, I think it was Max Christie, like into the front row. And this guy is rejuvenated. I'm like, man, Dan, like if he's plugged in defensively, and if Dorian Finney-Smith is out there, if Rui Hachimura is playing Nikola Jokic like he did, and LeBron's playing like he is since that trade, I mean, OKC's got to watch their back, man. Like, Luka is that good offensively. What if he's defensively? Like, I can give a lot more defensively.
Yeah. So a couple things on this, because let's make everybody sick. Since the trade, Luka Doncic, 3.0 steal percentage, 2.6 block percentage. He's getting a steal on 3% of opponent's offensive possessions, blocking a shot on 2.6% of those possessions. The only players in the league that are up above like 3 and 2.5 there.
What, I'm guessing Wemby and Evan Mobley and Tari Eason, like that's the kind of company he's having.
No, it's even sicker and weirder. Cause I mean, like the it's to get above like 2.5, 3 on both of them. It's Tari Eason, who is just like the entire job he has is go like, you know, go into the game and just sort of slicing people up. Keon Ellis, we've sung his praises on this show. And big Alex Caruso. Caruso in Oklahoma City. So it's the guys you like take off the bench and throw in the game and say like, go kill everybody. Those are the guys that are creating all that havoc. That's what Luka Doncic is doing since he's got to LA. Whether that continues, I mean, obviously very much remains to be seen whether that continues, but yeah, overall the Lakers since the trade 106.5 defensive rating, second in the NBA in that span. I don't know that anybody projected they were going to be better on defense than Anthony Davis. I certainly didn't. And I think the point that you make about Dorian Finney-Smith is interesting. I'll try to get through this quick because they don't have a plus rim protector anymore. Jackson Hayes is starting at center, but what they do have is a lot of like-sized strong guys that are big wings, right? They can play LeBron and Luka and Rui Hachimura and Dorian Finney-Smith. Even, you know, Austin Reeves is 6'5", 6'6". You know, they can put Jared Vanderbilt right now that he's healthy and back, another kind of havoc wreaker. So they can put out these super switchable lineups. And it's a different style than you would play with Anthony Davis where you would have him back in the drop. But you can get some stuff done that way. And there was that one possession that stuck out of my brain while I was watching it last night. It's 94-91 Lakers. You've got the Mavs need a bucket. The Lakers need a stop. And it's just on a string rotations. They're trying to go at Luka with Kyrie. So Kyrie, they know, you know, the Mavs over and over again are poking at Luka, trying to attack him. Goes at Kyrie, brings him in the pick and roll. Luka is in the drop. They go over the top of the screen to try to like defend from the rear view. Luka's right there on the other side of it. Kyrie's got nowhere to go, drops the ball off. LeBron steps up to stop the ball in the rotation. Kick to the corner. Dorian Finney-Smith is rotating from the top of the key all the way across your screen. You see him, you know, you go all the way from the top all the way to the corner. Long rotation, but he's there. PJ Washington does not have the airspace to get the corner three off. He's got to pull it down, drive baseline. LeBron's right there, contests him, throws up an air ball over the rim, can't get anything going, and then they're off and running out in transition. Like, there's a blueprint here. Now, whether Luka will always be as locked in on the defensive end, whether he'll be able to withstand some of the poking and pressuring the teams are going to put at him, remains to be seen. But there's something here. There's a blueprint of a switchable, big, physical defense, even without a top-flight rim protector, that you can get a lot of work done there. And yeah, as you're saying, like, if the ballpark idea of this Lakers team for this season was, well, if you got Luka and LeBron, you're probably going to have like a top five caliber offense. If you can put that with a defense that can consistently get stops, then we're not talking about what this team could be contending for later. We might be talking about what they could be contending for now.
Right now, Dan. I mean, I'm sorry, JJ Redick. I was not familiar with your game. The fact that you have gone from a top shelf podcaster, NBA shooter, NBA college basketball superstar, and then just be like, I'm going to be a poet. Exactly. That's right. It's so many talents back at Duke. If you go like right from podcasting in a studio, mind the game podcast with LeBron, and then become one of the best coaches in the NBA to get Luka fired up defensively and to get, I know DFS, they played together, but to get them all on a string, like you said it, in 5 games. This is absurd. This takes years usually. But when you get guys with basketball IQ, it kind of fast tracks all of this. And so like Redick loves to say, like, he's an NBA sicko. He's a basketball sicko. This last couple weeks has only legitimized that claim, because the fact that he's not getting any sleep going into the Denver game and the defense has been this good and this in sync already to the competition, you might say, bye, bye, bye. Can't believe I just did that. I can't believe I just did that.
Don't you apologize for being great. I'm proud of you and I support you.
It just happened. Yeah. So the Lakers just made me do that. Rob Pelinka, JJ Redick, all of them, Luka, if this is the worst they're going to be, that's incredible thought. So that defense, like that, people are going to say, oh, the offense with LeBron and Luka and the behind the back pass was incredible and the shot making was incredible. But defensively, that is the biggest variable. That Absolutely. Is the biggest variable standing between them and winning a championship or even contending for a championship. And stay tuned on the title tiers. I might have to put them in the 4-star tier. Ooh. And man, I'm very close to putting them on the same tier as OKC, Boston, and the big differs, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Dan, that was a fun episode. That was a fun episode. I hope they don't do what they did last year, the Cavs. I'm sorry, Mike, our senior producer. Last year, they were like 38-20 at this point in the season. And then it was bad in the second half of the year.
Why are you putting that evil on me, Ricky Bobby? Like, we got, like, this is, like, this is a good thing. It's a pure good thing we got going. You got to cherish it.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry about that. Hey, plus 11.7.
It's a big diff.
Best in Cavs history. The biggest differ we've ever seen in a Cavs uniform. Speaking of uniforms, let's get a Diffman uniform in Mike Goldfarb's outfit. We got to make it happen. Thanks to everybody for working on the show this week, making sure this goes on time and the train keeps on rolling. The Big Diff episode is over, but we got another one coming to you next week. Thank you to Stone. Thank you to Mike. Thank you to the entire squad that works hard behind the scenes to make this a reality. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. Yes, we are on YouTube. This is not just an audio podcast, but go subscribe on YouTube and at wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. Until then, make a big diff in your life. You know, this next week, be the diff in everyone's life. Okay, Dan? I know you do this on a regular. You wake up in the morning, you eat your Wheaties, and you say, I'm going to be the big diff in my family's life. Right?
I'm going to make one more big difference. Goodbye, everybody.